Okay, so this is January 24th, 2017, and this is an oral history interview of Betsy Cutler of Mill Valley, and I'm Joyce Kleiner, and I'm going to be conducting the interview. So before we go into some of the details of the interview, I just wanted to run over your bio, basic bio information first. Your full name is Betsy Pooley Cutler, and you live at 6 Hill Street, Mill Valley. You were born on March 26, 1942, in Morristown, New Jersey?
That's correct.
Okay. Your husband's name is John Harvey Cutler, and you have served on a variety of different civic roles in Mill Valley, so we'll get to that in a minute. You have two daughters, Karen, who was born in 1962, and Susan, who was born in 1964. Both of them are daughters from your first marriage, which was to Crispin Kraft, also a Marin local. And you have been married to John, your current husband, for 35 years in July, this coming July. And I think those were the things I wanted to read in. So now let's go into some of the how you got here story. So we're going to start with some of the personal stories first and then go on to your civic life. So let's talk about when you arrived in Mill Valley.
I arrived in Mill Valley in August or early September of 1969. My first husband had served in the Navy and as a naval officer in the Submarine Corps, and we had been stationed in San Diego and had had a trip to San Francisco, which we fell in love with. And then when he got out of the service, we were back east, but he looked for a job in San Francisco and got one. So we moved to California, and he didn't want to commute for too far. And we wanted to come into Marin, so we first looked in Sausalito, but didn't actually see anything there. And the schools were in kind of a tumultuous situation in Sausalito at that time. And my little girls were 5 and 3 or 6 and 4. And I just thought we needed to get to a town where the schools were more stable. And the next town up was Mill Valley. So we settled in Mill Valley, fortunately.
And then can you tell me a little bit about the next years after that? I know that at some point you separated, and so let's just kind of go through some of that part of the story.
Well, in the early part of living in Mill Valley, I, like a lot of young mothers, got involved with the PTA. Old Mill School PTA was my home. And I served on as PTA president of Old Mill. It was starting in 1972 and 3, and again in 3 and 4. I worked to help establish an enrichment program there, and we worked very hard at that time to try to get some foreign language into the schools. And then I served as president of the PTA Council of Mill Valley. And that was a time when the schools were, I don't believe they're like this today, but the schools were much more in competition with each other. Some were considered much better than others, rather than them all being considered so excellent as they are today. And one of the things I did when I was PTA council president was to have a monthly meeting of all the PTA presidents from the various schools, just so that we could get to know each other better and learn more about each other's schools and what was happening. So that was quite nice. It was really fun. It was my beginning part of being involved in the community.
And then so at one point you returned back to work full time.
Right. And that was in 1976 or 7 when my marriage broke up, and I went to work for political campaigns. I worked on Al Arambrew's supervisorial campaign, Barry Keane's state Senate campaign, few others. And I had 1 year where I worked as the town clerk for the town of Tiburon, mm-hmm. and that was very enlightening. And then in 1980, I went to work for Solomon Associates in San Francisco, which is mm-hmm.
How did you end up going straight into working political work?
Well, I was interested in government and campaigns and democracy, if you will. I had volunteered a little bit in some school board campaigns in Mill Valley, and I maybe a city council campaign before that. And it was kind of a natural for me, as it turned out.
And
I liked the organizing part of it and the community building base part of it.
How did you find your way to Solomon Associates?
Well, I knew Ann and Don Solom from Mill Valley. not well, but just as you know people in town. Mm-hmm. And Don had started the company in, I believe, 1976, and they were getting more and more business, and I was just invited to go there and work, and I was always glad that I did.
So you were working for them, and did you say for a year or longer?
No, I worked for them for 5 years, from 80 till 85. And I worked on, we had a statewide public education project, education and advertising to improve parent-child relations, especially surrounding teenagers with their parents. And I worked as the Northern California director of that. I did some political campaign management, some fundraising. And at that time, the firm was moving really more away from complete work and campaigns to doing more marketing and advertising.
And also eventually they moved to more issue-oriented
yes,
stuff.
Yes, we did very few candidates, mm-hmm. was issue-oriented things. We did a campaign in Berkeley that was helped to defeat an anti-Israel campaign that was very interesting. And then there was a Higher California's for Higher Education Bond Act in 1986, and I did statewide fundraising director for that. And then in the meantime, I got more involved in Mill Valley activities and was appointed to the Planning Commission.
So before,
after applying 3 times.
So I'm going to back up before we go into the civic contributions. So I wanted to ask about John. So when did you meet John?
I met John when he was on the school board and I was involved in the PTA. And actually, I believe I did a little volunteer work for him for one of his campaigns, probably his second one.
For the school board?
For the school board, uh-huh. And then he likes to tell people that I would go to the school board meetings and sit in the front row knitting and scowling at him.
So that's where you met. And by the way, before I go on, did you ever volunteer for the League of Women Voters?
No, I belong to the League of Women Voters and have for many years, but I've never really worked with them, in part because I was working for political campaigns of one side or the other,
mm-hmm.
and the League is quite nonpartisan in that regard.
So you met John.
Yes.
And how long were you dating before you got married?
Well, I knew John and I knew his first wife. She was on the board of Old Mill PTA when I was PTA president. And then unfortunately she died in 1980, I believe it was. And then John and I met on the bus coming home from work in San Francisco, struck up a conversation, and then started to go out. And then we were married in July of 82.
And you continued working for Solem. And then when you left Solem, did you... okay, so I think that maybe brings us up to your civic contribution state period, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've had a lot of roles. Before we go into the specifics of some of them, can you just list for me all of the civic volunteer jobs you've had in Mill Valley?
Well, I was appointed to the Mill Valley Planning Commission, and then I served on that for two terms on the city council, including two terms as mayor. I was on the Historical Society board for 5 years, and right now I'm in my fifth of 6 years serving on the Redwoods senior housing, Redwoods, a community of seniors.
And you also have been involved in at least one city council campaign as a campaign manager. You want to talk about that or no? Okay.
I don't know who that was for. Oh, Bomber. Sean, that's right. Yes, and I worked volunteer for the election of Sean Marshall when she was elected to the city council, and also campaign manager for Andy Berman for his first campaign.
For
Larry Brilliant and I pretty much headed up that campaign for Andy.
For city council?
For city council.
Okay. And you recruited Andy, didn't you?
Yes, I did, because I wanted Andy to be on the planning commission, and then when he first applied, he didn't make it, but then he applied again at my urging, because I reminded him that I had applied three times. and then I very much wanted him to be on the city council, and he did a great job for two terms.
So
now he's on the Redwoods board.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Okay. I want to go back to personal experiences briefly, because Anselm said to make sure to ask you about the around-the-world voyage you took with John. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. My term on the city council was up in the end of 97, and John was thinking of retiring right about that time. So we planned ahead, and in March of 1998, we got on a freighter in Dunkirk, France, and for 4 months went around the world. There were four passengers.
Four passengers. What was that like?
Oh, it was fabulous. We became fast friends with the two ladies who were on board with us. We each read 30 books, and it was the trip of a lifetime. You hear people say that, but this one really was.
What were some of the highlights about it, and where were some of the places that you got off? And
We went across the Atlantic to and through the Panama Canal, and we waited. We were very fortunate. We waited for a couple of days for our turn, and the captain told us that almost exclusively freighters go through at night so that the cruise ships can go through during the day. But for whatever the reason, we were slotted in to go through during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a highlight.
On the Panama Canal.
Yeah, through the Panama Canal. And then we stopped in Papeete for Tahiti for two nights, and we got off the ship there and went to a resort for overnight. Going to Papua New Guinea, not a place I think I ever would have gone, but we went there, stopped two or three times in various cities, and it was very interesting. Across the Straits of Malacca, across the Indian Ocean, through the Suez Canal, across the Mediterranean, up around the Sea of Biscay, and ended up in Antwerp.
Wow.
It was amazing.
And being on a freighter, besides the obvious differences that it wasn't a luxury cruise line, what made it, was it better in some ways, do you think?
It was better because we had kind of a suite, whereas on a cruise ship you might just have a small room. But we had a living room and a bedroom and a bathroom. It wasn't luxurious, but it was spacious. And there were just the four passengers, so we usually ate with the captain or he was in the dining room at the same time. And we had three decks all to ourselves. And every Sunday the captain would have a cocktail party for the officers, who were Russian and English, and a Russian crew. A Russian crew fixing English food, which wasn't great, but we looked forward to it every day. There was a library and a little gymnasium in the bottom of the ship that John went to every day. I didn't. But it was just, it was fantastic.
That sounds wonderful. Okay, now I'm going to go on to your civic roles now. And starting with a lot of questions, so I'm going to make sure I don't leave anything out. But let's just go chronologically. You were recruited to, well, you applied, you said, to the Planning Commission a couple of times before finally getting on. But you said you recruited Andy. So let's talk about your Planning Commission years and then going into the City Council and so on. So,
well, I was appointed to the Planning Commission and served on that for 6 years. It was a time in the early mid-80s when the price of houses took a steep upward turn, and many people came to town and really, really had to struggle to pay this enormous amount of money for a house, which at that time was $200,000, $300,000. And it was quite surprising and somewhat distressing to me that people who did that then did not want anything to happen around them. They wanted, they thought they were sacrificing so much to get this house that they didn't want anything to happen around them, and there would be some rather unfortunate and unhappy situations with neighbors.
So can you give me an example, just general, not names or anything? But
well, it would be a person would buy a house and spend a lot of money for it, and then a little while later someone would buy the house next door and maybe wanted to put a second story, or maybe wanted to enlarge the lawn, front lawn area, and encroach a little bit into the driveway of the house next door. And without having surveys, as you know, we don't usually have surveys when we buy houses here, and without having surveys, it would have been better just to kind of work it out. Mm-hmm. But there was some unhappiness with that. And I think we have to credit a lot of what Mill Valley looks like now and how it has stayed the same at the same time that it's also changed. But the way Mill Valley looks now, we have in large part have to thank Don Dickinson, who was the planning director at the time. He had a keen eye for what would fit nicely onto the property, and was very aware of the fact that we were not a town that was built with streets in a grid-like fashion, and that we needed to be individual.
And what, you had once mentioned to me, pointed out to me, that one of the challenges for Mill Valley and for the Planning Commission is that it's hard to just stick to a rubric of rules, because so many of the houses are on slopes and so on, so a fence can have much, for example, a fence below a house barely gives the house privacy, but it feels like a wall to the people below them and so on. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, yes, and that's very true. And we established at the time something called the floor area ratio, that had to do with the size of the house that you could put on a particular size of property. And that was in part to avoid having huge houses on smaller lots. And there was talk about a slope ordinance that did not exactly happen when I was on the Planning Commission, but in the meantime, I believe there is a slope ordinance. It might have happened in Andy's time, actually. There was a lot of talk about trees and trees being cut down or not cut down. And then when I was on the City Council some years later, we established a tree ordinance and heritage tree ordinance. But all of these things were done where you would try to have an ordinance be drafted that would encompass the likes and desires and wishes of the city and most of the residents, but it could not be in a grid-like fashion because mm-hmm. we're not flat and we don't have streets that just crisscross.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of energy for both the city staff and then the planning commissioners and most of all the public to come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
After serving, you completed your full 2 terms on the Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm.
After serving your 2 terms on the Planning Commission, you went on to be on the City Council, and that's kind of an interesting story, the way that happened. So can you talk about that a little bit?
I just would back up one more minute on the Planning Commission to say that I was the Planning Commissioner who was the liaison to the General Plan Committee that was in the 80s, and that was a citizens committee to work on revitalizing our general plan at that time, and that was very helpful to both the Planning Commission to have this citizens committee work on the general plan, because it helped us focus our thoughts on how we wanted the city to look.
So that was the what year was that? 1980.
It was in the 80s. It would have been 80, maybe 88.
And that general plan stayed in place until very recently.
Yes, until recently, the 2040 committee.
Okay.
Yes.
And what were some of the big challenges in getting that general plan written?
The biggest challenges at that time were the residents' desires to maintain a diversity of housing and a diversity of people.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the big ones. And there was the commercial element of the general plan, where we tried very hard to work with the Chamber of Commerce and to work with the citizens to hopefully get more resident-serving businesses so that the town would stay vibrant.
Let's go back a little bit to what Mill Valley was like when you got here and how you watched it change physically and or any other way that you want to add to that.
Well, I think we're very lucky that the downtown of Mill Valley has stayed as much the sameness as it has. Obviously, some of the stores have changed. There was a little department store on the corner. Mosier's was the shoe store. Anyway, there's a little department store on the corner where Equator is now.
Mm-hmm.
But in actual fact, the Mill Valley Market was there and still is. The Bank of America, Wells Fargo, the movie theater. We have still some of the good bones of downtown Mill Valley. And granted, some of the shops have changed, and I still miss Barney's and pharmacy right downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth Schneider owned that one little hardware store.
There were a couple of bars downtown.
Oh, there were many bars downtown. Yeah, there was Quinn's was part of the Mill Valley Deli. Mill Valley Market Deli is now, it was Quinn's. I think where Vasco was, there was a bar that was just a bar. There was a bar up by where Eileen Fisher is, or kind of up in that part of Throckmorton. There was a bar. There was also a gas station where Bungalow 44 is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a lot of gas stations.
And a post office. The post office was right across the street.
Yeah. So that's changed a lot. It doesn't
have... It has changed. It has changed a lot. And there was the general store right up from the movie theater, which I would consider to be an old-fashioned five and ten cent store. So a lot has changed, but in terms of the look, the buildings, so forth, I think we're lucky that it still looks as nice as it does.
So going back to the city council then, let's talk about how you got found yourself on the city council.
Well, Ruth Schneider resigned from the city council soon after she had been reelected to her second term, and she moved out of state, and the city council had the option of either holding a special election or going through the appointment process, and they chose to go through the appointment process because it was very expensive to run a campaign, and the appointment was going to be for basically 3.5 years, because Ruth really only served a few months after her election in April, and she left in July, I believe, or early July. Anyway, I was the chairman of the Planning Commission, and I thought, well, this is my chance to get onto the city council. And like any kind of job, if you will, you feel like you do one job, and then you think that maybe you'd like to move up. You'd like to be promoted, so to speak. So I applied, as did 8 other people. There were 9 of us. And then you submitted us an application answering the questions that the council had raised, and then had an interview. And then the council voted and chose. One of the things that was interesting to me, and I don't know if this is why I was ultimately selected, but I thought it might have something to do with it, is that the city was going through budget hearings in mid-June, and I was the only person of the 9 who had applied to the council who sat through all of those budget hearings and tried to educate myself on the city budget. So I was very, very fortunate and appreciative of getting the appointment.
Now, because you hadn't run, you felt that it was important that people know who you are. So, as I recall, you sent out postcards or letters to the community and invited them to come and meet you at coffees or something? Was
that was really at the end of my first term, before the second term, because at that time it was Warren Levinson and myself who were up for re-election, and we ran unopposed. And yes, at that time I did send out a postcard, which Solomon Associates helped me design and print, to all the residents asking and saying some things about what the city council had been doing and some of my thoughts and my priorities. And then there was a tear-off at the bottom asking them to send back their thoughts, which it was quite a nice response, and I was very pleased. And at that time, one of the biggest concerns that people had, and this would have been in 93 or 93, was traffic.
Yep.
Traffic and big houses being built.
Yep. So some things don't change.
Some things don't change.
So were you serving on the planning and the city council when the library and the community center were, well, the library had a significant renovation or addition to it, and the community center was built. Were you on the city council at that time?
Yes.
And were you also on the city council when the dog park thing came up?
Yes.
Okay.
Two high points and one low point.
Okay. So let's talk about them. First,
In terms of the community center, that really got started in 1988, and I was on the planning commission, and I, along with 14 other Mill Valley citizens, were asked to investigate and consider whether we could and should and would be able to build a new community center. And that committee went around the Bay Area looking at community centers. We ultimately did a survey of citizens to see what people wanted and how we could pay for it. And then it took about 12 years, but finally it opened.
Who were some of the stewards of that project over the...
Well, Dennis Fisco was really one of the lead fundraisers in that. Penny Weiss had been hired by the city to be the fund developer. And any number of people worked hard on it. My husband, John worked hard on it. Any number of people worked hard to raise the money, as well as it wasn't for all the money, but good part of the money. And then there were many meetings with architects to determine what we wanted and how it was to look. It was a long process, and it wasn't easy. And there were times when there were many times when things didn't seem to be going well, and we weren't sure about whether it was ever going to happen. And we just kept, I remember time after time voting yes, we're going to spend this money.
And by now you're on the city council, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
By then I was on the city council. Yes, we're going to spend this money, and we just kept saying, if we build it, they will come. But there were many times when I would go home after a meeting and wonder, mm-hmm. you know, if this was really going to happen.
Would you say that there were individual people who were advocating, like identified advocates for this?
Well, yes, many people. The swimming pool had a whole series of people who were advocates. And really, really hoping for that the swimming pool would be included, which of course it has been. And then people who wanted the exercise room, people who wanted the room for yoga and dance, people who wanted a senior center, a teen center, the lobby. At one point, there was to be a little cafe in the entryway lobby, and then of course the large room for events. So it was a huge community effort.
And that's the Cascade Room, right?
That's the Cascade Room.
And
yes.
it was decided that instead of having a classic gymnasium layout with basketball hoops and stuff, that the Cascade Room was a more attractive room, more of a ballroom kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And although you do have like low impact exercise classes and things in there,
and a lot of
children's programs.
Children's programs,
but it is also meant to generate income.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is meant to generate income, and it I believe it does, and it's used for weddings, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, birthday parties, anniversary parties, memorial services, any kind of gathering you can imagine.
Right. So then the library, were you on the city council when the library renovation happened?
Yes, I was.
That was an addition, right?
A renovation and an addition,
mm-hmm.
Yes. And Anne Montgomery was the city librarian. Kathy Barnes, who was on the city council with me, was very, very helpful and instrumental in that getting past the bond issue. There was a survey taken right around the same time that there was talk about fixing the library and the community center was going to be built. And the respondents, the citizens, said that they did not want to pay any extra taxes for the community center. But the library was much more favorably inclined for a bond issue. So that was interesting, and we proceeded in that fashion afterwards. And then interesting, I can't quite remember what year the library passed. I think it might have been 98, but I just do remember that it passed with 74%. It was a huge win.
Yeah. And it's beautiful library.
And it is beautiful.
Really beautiful. And Anne Montgomery was librarian then.
Yes.
And she remained librarian until she was promoted to city assistant manager.
Assistant manager.
City manager.
Yeah.
Now, you were also on the city council when the dog wars, as they're called, happened. So
yes.
Let's hear about that. We'll just make sure this is still going. Yeah, okay.
That was not a happy time. We knew that...
By the way, can you give me essentially a date when this came before you?
Well, I would say it was 1996 and 7.
Okay.
5, 6, and 7, maybe. We knew that we wanted to do something in terms of building a dog park because so many people have dogs. And some of the dogs were a little bit out of control in the downtown. To hearken back, when I first came in 1969, there was so little traffic in Mill Valley. Mostly men working would go on a bus or drive to San Francisco during the day, or early in the morning to go to work, come back at 6 o'clock. But during the day, there was very little activity in downtown Mill Valley, and there would be the blonde dogs of Mill Valley, the golden retrievers, that would be sleeping in the intersection between Vasco and the Equator now, and cars would just kind of go around them and so forth. It was very charming. Anyway, by 1995 or 6, there were many more dogs, and we felt that we needed to do something and wanted to have a dog park. Dog parks were becoming a little bit more well-known throughout. So the question was whether the dog park was going to be where one of the soccer fields is. Was it going to be on the east side or the west side, in front of the public safety building or closer to the middle school? And people had very, very strong opinions.
Now, did this go to the Park and Rec Commission first?
I believe it did. But in fairness, I can't remember how it got up to the council. But it came to the council with a lot of animosity amongst a lot of people. There's still a woman in Mill Valley who won't speak to me over that. And at the end of the day, we had very large meetings. David Robb was the mayor, and he did a really great job in keeping his cool and our cool, the rest of us, calmed down, because people were so upset. Because they wanted either a larger park or in a different area. There were all kinds of reasons, some people wanted water faucets and washing off facilities and benches and all kinds of things that we just weren't quite ready to do yet. First we had to figure out a place. And the soccer field, the fields were being used, and it was very difficult to schedule the use of these fields because more and more girls were playing and there were more and more children needing the fields. And so the soccer field just wasn't the right place for a dog park, despite the fact that an awful lot of the dog people wanted it there.
And there where was a lot the soccer field then? Because there's been a lot of changes.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the soccer field that was just right at the bridge going from the middle school over to the public safety building.
Okay.
On the west side of the water.
Oh, hang on. So there was at one time a bridge that went from the middle school over the water to the public safety building?
Just a walking bridge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's still there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're...
One of the biggest upsets amongst the dog people was they did not want the dog park located where it is now, at the more or less down the bike path a ways from the middle school, because there's the field, and then there's the dog park. And they did not, many people did not want it down at that end.
And why was that?
It was too far to walk.
So it was more the dog people didn't want it to
Oh, it was all the dog park. It was all the dog people.
And where did they want it?
Well, they either wanted it at the soccer field that's adjacent to it. Some people wanted it across the water right in front of the public safety building. Some people did not want that because they didn't want cars coming around and so many cars coming around with people with their dogs. And there was more parking at the middle school. So there was every argument you could imagine on both sides. And it was quite nasty. It was quite nasty. There was one time, and this is really hard for me to even repeat, but none of us who were there will ever forget it. But there was a man who stood up. It was in the Methodist Church at a very large meeting, and said he thought he was an advocate for the dog park being on the soccer field. And he said he thought it would be a good civic lesson for the children to go and pick up all of the dog waste before they had their practice. That would be a good civic activity for the children. Well, this brought the house down. That was just one example of...
Wow.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. So now, it's 20 years later, and it seems like people are very happy,
now,
I hope.
I understand that there was just a lot of tension, particularly between the people who wanted, I guess, just to protect the soccer field. They were asking to use the land to increase fields. It was just to protect the soccer field. And my understanding was that the biggest rifts were specifically between the parents of children playing sports and the dog owners. Was that pretty much how it was?
Yes, yes. And the dog owners were very, very outspoken.
There was even attacks on children, right? Do you remember any of those?
No, other than the one that I just related about how children should do their civic duty by picking up other people's dogs' waste. But I know that there were and then one of the things that the city council had to deal with was the safety of the people, because that's one of our biggest concerns and charges. And it was important, we felt it was important that the police and the safety officers would have some ammunition if we had a dog park and people were then allowing their dogs to run free and maybe knock down children or possibly knock down older people who might be a little bit unsteady on their feet. And if you could say, well, you have a dog park and that's where you have to go and that's where you need to be with your dog, and it's not appropriate to be running around loose on the sidewalks and in the downtown area. So that was a bit of an overriding concern and part of our thinking in part of the council's thinking in terms of trying to get to a resolution, to get to yes.
Mm-hmm. I also understand that one of the reasons that the public safety building area was vetoed was because an environmental impact study was done, and that was a more vulnerable area.
Yes.
For wildlife, was
it? As you go from the middle school over that pedestrian bridge towards the public safety building, now to the left, there are soccer fields, but to the right, it's still kind of a pristine mm-hmm. land. And yes, that was a high consideration.
So I'm looking at my notes, and
there's one other highlight I would like to mention, if okay. I may, and that is the citizens of Mill Valley and beyond voted for a fire flow initiative, and that was hard fought, and it was extremely necessary.
Can you explain what that is?
It was a parcel tax. I believe it's $75. It might have gone up by now, but I think it was $75. And it was to increase the pipes and the fire hydrants to be able to have higher pressure and the ability to put out a fire if necessary. Mm-hmm. And Mill Valley was the largest recipient of the funds, because we had the oldest system and we have the 49 miles of roads, and so this was a very big deal. Former supervisor Hal Brown, who has since died, he was involved in that at the county level. There was a survey taken that showed that we could in fact pass this if we worked hard on it. And again, I can't quite remember the year, but I think it was 90. I think it might have been 92. And anyway, that was a real highlight. And one of the firemen in Mill Valley, Jim McClure, was a big advocate for this, and he was extremely convincing because he knew every pipe and every fire hydrant in Mill Valley, and he knew what we needed.
So, and fire is one of the big challenges yes. for Mill Valley, yes. partly because a lot of people live in the hills. Right.
When the Oakland fire happened, which I believe was 91, Dick Spotswood was on the council, and I was newly on the council, but he and I, and I don't know if anyone else went, some staff members went over to Oakland after that was over, but to look and see and have a tour and get some lessons on what had gone right, what had gone wrong. And that was the precursor of the fire flow initiative for a county.
And these are the kinds of things you don't hear about too much when people are running for city council. Generally, they bring up things that tend to be more exciting or something. But so why don't you talk a little bit about some of the things that city council really spends most of their time working on, or should spend most of their time working on?
Well, a huge amount is spent on budget and determining the budget and then following up to see that the money is being spent as the policy dictates. So there's part of that. There's the work that's not so much seen in the public, having to do with public safety, with fire, with sewers, meeting after meeting on these issues, some planning commission appeals.
Did that increase, planning commission appeals? Have they increased? Have you seen an increase in appeals to the city council?
I don't think that increased when I was on so much, but a lot of that has to do with who was actually on the planning commission and how the decisions are rendered. And then maybe rather recently we've been in a situation where the neighbors once again are unhappy if somebody near them is building something that's too big. And it's not very onerous to, it's not onerous to a person or an individual to appeal a planning commission decision.
Mm-hmm. And they can do that, right?
Up to the city council.
If you decide to appeal, the city council has to listen to the appeal.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Right. So what other things did you learn about what it really takes to serve on the city council that maybe surprised you before you started? I mean, what if you didn't know until you started?
Well, certainly all the intricacies of the budget and the priorities, having to establish the priorities, and learning how to answer when a constituent would say, well, why don't you do this and why don't you do that? Mm-hmm. And why don't you have more plantings, or why don't you have more streetlights, or why don't you do whatever their little pet thing is? And it's a matter of priorities. It's obviously very important to have a great staff, and I had Doug Dawson as a city manager the whole time I was on, and he was an excellent teacher and an excellent city manager. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, Don Dickinson was the planning director, and I felt he did an excellent job in a difficult situation. The city council establishes the policies, and that's where you try to take these divergent views that come in from the populace and develop a policy that will be for the benefit of the majority. And then it's up to the staff to do the work to manage the city adhering to the policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It takes time, it takes commitment to listen to everyone, and I think a commitment to try to always make sure that people are having a fair hearing, so that when they leave, even if you've turned them down, they can say, well, they listened to all the facts and they treated us fairly, and sorry I didn't win, but I was treated well.
I have a note here that someone suggested I ask you about communication. Maybe not. I thought someone had said to ask you about communication. Let me just ask you myself, how do you think that communication with the public from City Hall has changed over the years?
Well, it's amazing to me, because when I was on, I can't even remember if we had cell phones. I think Doug Dawson had a phone in his car. And I had, towards the end of my term, I had something that was like a brick. but there was no such thing as email, and certainly social media and so forth. So it's quite amazing to me today that they have the city website, they have the videotaping of the, or videos of the city council meetings. We didn't have that. You can look at the website. The city manager puts notices on to the public every couple of weeks or every week. So there's an immense amount of communication that's coming from the city. I still hear people say, oh, I didn't know that, or I didn't know that. So it's a two-way street. My own personal opinion now is that the city is doing an excellent job in communicating, but it's now up to the public to pay attention. And a lot of times it's not particularly sexy or particularly, you know, scintillating. It's just business.
Since the newspaper doesn't really report much about the city council and so on anymore, what's your recommendation to just the average citizen resident of Mill Valley, how to how to remain informed? If someone said, how do I remain informed, what would you tell them to do?
Well, I guess initially it would be to get involved with the neighborhood association if you have one,
mm-hmm.
And hope that the head of that, president of that or whatever, would try to keep their individual association mm-hmm. informed. And we have that neighborhood, whatever that neighborhood thing is called.
Oh, yeah.
Neighborhood watch or something.
Yeah.
It's not that, but... other than that, I think it's called Next Door.
Yeah, Next Door.
Other than that, I would just encourage everybody to sign up for the city website and to sign up to get the reports and the newsletters.
Yeah.
I mean, they put something out every week or every other week about what's happening on Miller Avenue so that you can really keep up.
Yeah.
Of course, going to city council meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Or watching them through the video.
Yeah.
The planning department now posts notices, I think it's 200 feet, a radius of 200 feet from a project that's coming before the planning commission. So there's an opportunity if it's in your very mm-hmm. immediate neighborhood to find out.
But there is a lot of information on the website, including the archived video recordings mm-hmm. of the meetings in this. The city council, the planning commission, all of the commission meetings are taped, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know about Parks and Rec, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. So would during your years, particularly, hang on. You are current, after you left the planning commission, I mean, city council, what was your civic volunteer experience after that?
Well, I was on a vacation for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined the Historical Society Board.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on that for 5 years and worked on, most particularly with the History Walk.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, then.
I'm going to pause. So I'm sorry. You were saying about what you did after you left the city council. So
I joined the Mill Valley Historical Society
okay,
Board.
Right. And you did the history walk. I have.
Yeah.
Now. Okay.
And then 5 years ago, so that would be 2012, I was invited to join the board of the Redwoods,
mm-hmm.
which I have done, and I've served 2 years as president of the board.
Are you currently the president?
No. This is my last year, and I am not the president.
Okay.
And before that, and this is not about community service, but in 2005, John and I bought a small farmhouse in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
We usually are over there 2, 3, 4 months a year.
And how did you choose Ireland?
We had been to Ireland twice on bicycle trips, and then we went in 2004. We went to go walking, and we just happened to settle in this area of southwest Cork that we fell in love with, and then we went back the next year. I bought a little farmhouse.
That's nice. So you're there, and what time of year are you usually there?
We're usually there for the summer, and then maybe go once in the winter it depends on the winter and what mm-hmm. we're doing and whether we're skiing and so forth, for 3 or 4 weeks.
That reminded me of something else I wanted to ask you about your personal life, but... Oh, yeah. You've owned a number of different houses in Mill Valley, haven't you?
Yes. When I first moved to Mill Valley, I lived 251 Molino Avenue. Then, when I was divorced, I bought a condominium at Park Terrace. Then when John and I were married, I moved into his house, which was a large five or six bedroom house, and we had six children between us, so that seemed far more reasonable than him moving into my two-bedroom condo. And then when the children were gone, out of college and married or on their own, and I had had enough of redwood trees and darkness on Corte Madera Avenue, we moved up to Birch Street on a flat piece of property with no trees and lots of sun, and remodeled a house, 29 Birch Street. And we lived there for 21 years. And then we decided we wanted to be downtown in a one-story house close to town so we could walk. And so we sold our Birch Street house, and we are now renting a house on Hill Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's lovely, and we can walk to the restaurants, we can walk to the movie, to the market, to the library, to the banks. We often walk downtown twice a day, sometimes three times a day. It's wonderful.
What would you say are the challenges Mill Valley faces, and how are they different from the ones that you saw, 20 years ago?
I think they're the same challenges, but with higher intensity,
mm-hmm.
because of instant communications and people knowing so much and the stress of life. It's just more than it was 20 years ago. But the challenges are the same. There's traffic. There's, of course, people are very interested in schools and the great quality of schools and maintaining that. Housing, it's becoming ever increasingly more difficult to have diversity of housing in Mill Valley because of the high value of the land and expensive houses. So that's a big challenge.
Now, you had actually mentioned when you first applied, I think it was to the city council, that you felt that a diversity of housing and being able to house our seniors and people on different economic strata. And do you feel that there's been any positive steps? I mean, the Redwoods continues to grow and expand and serve more people, but it's limited by its real estate boundaries. We do have some low-income properties that actually serve. We have a couple of apartment complexes that are entirely committed to low income, but there's only so much land to put on new low income housing or affordable housing. So what do you feel is there any hope that this diversity of economic levels can stay,
mm-hmm.
and why would it be important to keep it?
Well, it's important to keep it so that we keep the heart and soul of Mill Valley and not be any more homogeneic than we already are. And the idea of being able to have people from all walks of life and all income and all everything makes us richer. At the end of the day, one thing I'd have to correct: the Redwoods has not grown.
Mm.
A dream of building possibly 40 more units at some point, but it is a far off dream.
Mm-hmm.
Second units or junior units, as they're called, but second units. When I was on the Planning Commission and the City Council, we worked very hard to legalize the second units that were already in existence and to a certain degree encourage people to have them if they could provide the parking and mm-hmm. some of the other restrictions. But that is a way to maintain some diversity of income. Interestingly enough, 1/3 of the housing units in Mill Valley are apartments. Mm. It's a hard figure to remember. But one of the big challenges is some of these apartment buildings are maybe coming to the end of their useful life.
Mm-hmm.
And ways to encourage the owners to either refurbish them or somehow maintain them as apartments, rental apartments, rather than tear down and build expensive condos or mega mansions. So that's a big challenge for the city council and for the government and for the people. I think we just have to keep working on it, and we have to keep chipping away at it. We don't have the land to have a big, massive project of low-income housing, and maybe we don't want that anyway. We like to have units scattered amongst us all.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a challenge, and I think we're very fortunate now. Jessica Jackson Sloan is the mayor, and it's her highest priority to work on affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we may hear and see more efforts in that on that behalf.
I hear talk sometimes about creating some kind of a trust fund for raising money to buy some of the infill and convert it. Is that still being talked about, and is there any hope that anything like that could happen?
I really don't know. I had heard about that a few years ago, actually, but I haven't heard anything about it recently. And I don't know. I think some communities do that, and I think some communities do things like either buy a house or enable, for instance, the police chief, maybe even the city manager, to live in town, which is not exactly the same, but it's a little bit akin.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whether it's possible. And in today's world, with things being so terribly expensive, when you think that just around the corner from where we live now, a house on Presidio fronting Miller Avenue, 2 bedrooms, 1 bath, 1,000 square feet, and it just sold for $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very steep challenge.
So I want to kind of return to some of your personal life again. And you've now lived in Mill Valley how many years?
48.
And so you have a very rich pool of friends here in Mill Valley. I mean, you know a lot of people, and they're personal friends of yours. And I, in the Bay Area, you don't see as much of this kind of long-term residence in one place in other towns as much as, I mean, at least I don't see it as much down on the peninsula where I grew up. So can you just talk a little bit about what it's been like to live in a place where your children started as little kids, and you made, and the friends that you made, and now you're adults, and what it's meant to you to have this continuity of friendships? Mm-hmm. And
well, it means everything. I mean, I lived here for a few years, maybe a number of years, before I actually thought of this as where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of think of where you're from as where you were raised.
Mm-hmm.
I could say I'm from New Jersey. But now that I'm older, and my husband's a little older than I am, and we see friends of ours moving away for a variety of reasons, and we too thought about, well, maybe we should move from Mill Valley for whatever the reason. And then you look around and in our little town, and we have a movie theater and nice restaurants and a couple of banks and so forth. And so where else are you going to find this? And it's so nice just to walk downtown and be in the market and see people that you've seen for years and years. Maybe you know them only slightly, but enough to say hello to and you know, care about.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, our own friends, many, many of whom live in Mill Valley or San Francisco or Larkspur, you know, close by. At the end of the day, for me, there's just kind of no substitute for that familiarity and we take it for granted, the beauty of where we live, we take it for granted, but every time we come back and you land at San Francisco Airport and you come out and the air is clean and it looks so nice and it feels so good, and you're on the bus on the Marin Airport or coming across the Golden Gate Bridge and you think, wow, this is fantastic. And I've always appreciated the fact that the friends that we made now, close to 50 years ago, it had nothing to do with how rich people were or how anything they were, just nice people that you had some things in common with and you could stay friends. Yeah, it's nice. It's very nice. I imagine people from little towns or small cities all over the country feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't as if this is the only place to live, but it happens to be where I live, and so it's what I like.
I get these questions, and then you were you served on the Historical Society board, and can you give me a sort of pros and cons about how Mill Valley is very proud of its history? We have a very active Historical Society. Mill Valley's history is often brought up to defend a position in the city council or a planning commission or even the park and rec. So can you give me a little pros and cons about valuing our history? Things that it's good for, but also does it provide challenges for the future?
Mm-hmm. It certainly does provide challenges. Well, I will err in my thinking to the historical part of it, because I think it's just so important not to plow things down, and to keep as much as we can, or at least to keep the facade of some buildings, even if you are going to renovate and modernize inside. And I think very close to us, the Presidio is a wonderful example of how they have been able to do that. So that's, for me, a good example. Yes, I mean, California is not that old, and Mill Valley is not that old in the scheme of things, and when you go to London or Rome or any place, you realize that. But it's important for me to feel that we're keeping as much as we can, and to keep the great old houses and the buildings downtown. And yeah, I think it's important.
And what challenges do you think holding on to Mill Valley's history can bring up? Do you think that people get locked into a particular period that they remember well and want things to, it doesn't have to be way back in the beginning, you know, 1900.
No, and of course as time goes on, and nowadays if you go to an antique store, you see a lot of furniture there from the 40s and the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's very familiar looking to me. So I think we have to try to maintain some balance between the old and the new, and maybe begin to think about keeping things from the 40s and the 50s, mm-hmm. which is kind of funny to think of. It's just a good marker for people. And if there's a way that a building can be saved and maintained, and the owner wants to do that, then I think it's very important. And if there's not, then you just realize that maybe we're just kind of chipping away, and you don't want to be in a position where you're looking back for 20 years ago and say, gee, it's too bad we let that happen.
What are some of the businesses that you miss the most that aren't here anymore?
Well, I guess I would say the Tamalpais General Store when it was, I don't think that was the name of it then. I don't know. Anyway, it was a 5 and 10.
When it was originally a 5 and 10.
When you could buy thread and needles. And a hardware store right downtown. Now, having said that, we have some new businesses that are really fun and great. I mean, some of the coffee shops are great. The little restaurant on Sunnyside that used to be called Toast. Mm-hmm. It has a new name now. It's wonderful to go for breakfast. Sweetwater has great food. So you can't, it's not always just, you know, what you miss. It's mm-hmm. it's some new things come in and that are really good. I think it's, for me, and maybe it's because I'm old, but it's ever increasingly more difficult to buy things in Mill Valley mm-hmm. because it's clear that the market demands these shops where the prices are higher. Mm-hmm. And $200 for a t-shirt or $350 right. for a white blouse right. is more than I want
to
spend.
And where do you go for a needle and thread now? You have to go.
You have to get in the car, and this is one of the problems. I'll just tell you a little story of where we live in Ireland. It's very close to a town called Bantry, which is small, but it has everything. Now, it doesn't have a huge amount of choice. If you need a greeting card, there's one, maybe two places. There's a grocery store, a couple of pharmacies, a bank, maybe two banks, naturally a lot of pubs, some butcher shops. But you can live there and never go anyplace else, and you have everything you need. And you park once, and you walk around. And here we're very tempted. But if you want a greeting card and you can't quite find it, exactly what you want, you think, oh, I'll go up to the town center, or I'll go here, or I'll go there. And it's the same way with buying a t-shirt. Well, I'll go to the Gap, and then I'll go someplace else, and so forth. And all of that contributes to the traffic and the congestion mm-hmm. and the stress of your life.
Mm-hmm. What's your personal opinion about the small chain stores that serve those more prosaic needs being downtown? You know, there's been a lot mm-hmm. of debate about what is acceptable and what isn't and so on.
Well, it doesn't upset me. It doesn't upset me too much, really. Years ago, as I mentioned earlier, I spent 1 year working as a town clerk for the town of Tiburon. And there was a great debate going on in Tiburon at that time about the banks, because there were quite a number of banks. And the city council got mired in, are three banks too many, or four not enough, or two would be just right, but then we've already got four, so what are we going to do? And it just couldn't work. It just had to go for market forces. That was 1979, and I've thought about that so many times. If a place comes into town and it doesn't do well, whether it's a chain or whether it's not, doesn't really matter. And if it does well, that's fine too. There was a huge argument about one of the grocery stores over by where CVS is now. I mm-hmm. think it was that Purity Market, or I don't know. No, Red Cart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a major fight many years ago. And then there was talk about how terrible it was to have some chain in downtown Mill Valley, and then people forget that Whole Foods is a chain. Or that Safeway is a chain. Or Eileen Fisher is a chain.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely, lovely little store. An Equator is now, and there's several Equators, but it started in Mill Valley.
Mm-hmm. Pete's.
Pete's.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not anything that I get terribly upset about.
So you've known a lot of people who had various civic roles in Mill Valley. Who are some of those people that you admired the most and feel like deserve to be remembered in particular?
Well, going way back from when I first came to town, Ivan Pudiatin, Dick Jessup stand out in my mind. I knew Jean Barnard, but I think she was off the council then. And then coming forward, certainly Dick Spotswood and Kathleen Foote, Allison Rudy before she died. She was a wonderful council person. Joan Bosenecker. Everybody thinks that they served on the best council. So I love David Robb and Kathy Barnes, John Leonard, Warren Levinson.
And what would you say are two or three of the most important traits to serving on the city council effectively?
Patience. Ability to really see all sides, not just give lip service. And commitment to the whole, commitment to the community.
And you have served the community basically the entire time you've been living in Mill Valley, and you continue to serve it. What motivates you to continue to serve so consistently?
Well, a sense of doing what's really fun for me. I get out of it for myself, I think, more than I put in. It's a great community that has served me well, and I was raised in a family where my mother and father were both very active in community service. My father was on the school board. When he retired and moved, that was in New Jersey, when he retired and moved to Florida, he went on the city council in his little town. My mother was a Girl Scout leader, involved in the church. It just was something that was happened in our family.
So a sense of service is what you're describing.
Yeah.
You feel that you give back.
And I actually think that being an elected official is very honorable. It's an honorable profession.
Yeah.
And I think that of the locals, the county, the state, and the Congress. Some are better than others, but it's an honorable profession.
I wanted to take a couple of minutes to just mention that very recently we lost an important community member, Dawn Solem, the wife of Ann Solem. And so I wanted you to take this opportunity to say a couple of things about Dawn, since we never had a chance to interview him.
Yeah. Well, I hope you will get a chance to interview Ann.
Oh, she's been interviewed.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good, great. Well, Don was fantastic, and when I went to work for him, for Solomon Associates, although I had worked for the California Democratic Party and worked on some campaigns, he really taught me, I would easily say, everything I know about campaigns and how to bring people together and how to community organize. As he just had such a sharp mind and such an ability to bring people together and to advocate for a position, whether primarily propositions or occasionally a candidate. Plus, he was just great fun. He loved baseball, and well, I think he loved football, but I didn't care about that. But we occasionally would have the pleasure of going to baseball games with him. He was an avid reader. We often have dinner with Ann and Don, and in the last couple of years, meet over at Sailor's restaurant in Sausalito, and you get there, and Don's sitting there reading a book, puts it down, and between conversations, he reads a page. And he was always having 3, 4, 5 books going at a time, belonged to several book clubs. He just was a voracious reader. And a wonderful person to know in town. And I was particularly honored to know him as well as I did, and worked for him, and yeah, it was great. No, I really miss him already.
Yeah, everyone's been saying the same thing. You're a voracious reader too. What kind of books do you like to read? You have a particular type of book you read a lot?
Well, I guess I would like to say quality fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Although having said that, I just finished reading Hillbilly Elegy, which mm-hmm. is a memoir, which I thought was very important, a really important book mm-hmm. for this time. But yes, I'm in a book club, and we read mostly fiction, but some nonfictions, and some good nonfiction is appealing to me. It's hard for me to stick with something that's too dry.
Mm, yeah.
But I read the New York Times every day, and usually read 20, 25 books a year.
Mm. Well, I think we're almost done. And the last question I have, let me just make sure I didn't... No, I okay. The last question I have is if... What do you wish for Mill Valley going forward?
Well, I wish that we would have continued public, civil commitment by our residents and participation. Because I do think, I mean, I have faith that the decisions would be good if we had more and more people participating. It's so encouraging to me to see how many people move to town and immediately get involved with Kiddo, because mm-hmm. oftentimes people move for the schools, and the Kiddo is so vibrant and has so much participation, and then hopefully, much as in my case, that it transfers from your involvement with your children and then the enjoyment of that, and then you can switch it over to involvement in civic.
And you'd like to see that continue.
Yeah, I'd like to see that continue. And things to stay the same as much as possible,
mm-hmm.
but also to embrace change as it comes, the good change as it comes.
Okay. Thanks, Betsy.
Thank you.